There's a place in New York where you can walk through the actual front doors of the world's most famous recording studio, Abbey Road. Through those doors, past the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, and countless other rock giants. Where can you find those doors? At the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. The Abbey Road doors and thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock Cafes, Hard Rock Casinos, and Hard Rock Hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time to get started with today's Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. I'll be joined presently by Mickey Lee, born Mitchell Lee Hyman and younger brother of Jeffrey Ross Hyman, better known to all as Joey Ramone. Mickey is responsible for teaching Joey how to play guitar, help him write songs, and since his brother's passing, has been instrumental in promoting his brother's legacy. But Mickey has also had his own music career and projects, which leads us to the recent coolest song in the world, Felt Like Love, out on Wicked Cool Records. Let's hear some of the single now, and then I'll be back with Mickey on the line for your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Manfred, and it is time now to get chatting on our Coolest Conversations with my special guest today, musician and writer and brother of Joey Ramone, Mickey Lee, rock and roll punk rock royalty here. This week, he's got our coolest song in the world, Felt Like Love. It is a new single out on Wicked Cool Records. Hi, Mickey. How are you?
Hey, Manfred. I'm happy to be here. Happy to be anywhere, actually.
Man, I got to ask you here, so I think it was last year that Mickey Lee's Mutated Music got issued, the EP. Did that come out last year?
That came out last winter, yeah.
Last winter. So part of the press for that said that your plan is to save rock and roll one song at a time. Now you got this new single, Felt Like Love, out on Wicked Cool Records. Are things going according to the plan?
We'll see. But I didn't say save. We say rescue rock and roll.
Okay, all right.
Our goal is to rescue rock and roll one song at a time.
Because, and so the resuscitation is going on well then?
Well, we're working on it, you know. I think we're making progress.
How did you get hooked up with Steven's label, with Wicked Cool?
Well, I've known Steven since the 80s, really. He and my brother were friends, but the manager of my band at that time, the Rattlers, did something at the Cat Club, and actually Steven was doing a DJ thing at the Cat Club, I think once a week or something like that. And so I've known him a long, long time. And he did hear when I was writing these songs, I was sending them to him, and he wanted to put out a whole album, but whatever involvement I can have with the Underground Garage and all you guys is fantastic.
So you mentioned sending him songs. When did you write Felt Like Love?
Actually, I wrote that in 2011. I woke up at, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, it's like 3 o'clock in the morning and you got a great idea and you mm-hmm. say to yourself, this is really good. I know, I'm sure I'll remember it tomorrow. And after enough times of that screwing up, that plan doesn't always work. So I got up and I wrote the whole song out, wrote the words, what I could come up with at the time, and did a little video on my laptop webcam.
Oh, wow. When did you actually record the tune?
About 2 years ago.
Okay.
We We started recording that and finished it up about a year ago.
Well, to me, it's got this kind of sort of a Who vibe or feel to it even. Was there any kind of
I stole it straight from the Who. I'm not going to deny it, but I'm a huge fan of the Who since I'm a little kid, obviously. But it's kind of a combination of, I don't know, 3-4 Who songs. You pick them.
Well, all good ones, or you wouldn't have put them in the song, you know?
Exactly. I mean, it's Marianne with the Shaky Hands is in there, and it's that kind of humor. It's a song that might have been on Who's Sell Out. I was in the Who.
So you woke up in the middle of the night and you kind of put the song together. So when you finally got around to recording it, it was pretty much the vision that you had woken up with? Is that how it came together, the final version of it?
Well, I was hearing all that in my head. I hadn't woken up. I hadn't really gone to sleep yet. It was, us musicians have strange hours. So it was about 3 in the morning. It's pretty much that version, although once you get in the studio, you tend to go a little wild, you know, which is a good thing.
That is a good thing. But there are no glockenspiels on there, though.
Do you hear any?
Especially with like keyboard things or like vibes or whatever, it's like, God, did I hear that in there? Is my mind just projecting in there? Because I think it would sound rather some tone kind of hangs
well,
over.
That kind of confusion is kind of typical of the day, of the times. Did he say that? I don't know. It shouldn't be defined, you know? Left to the imagination. And that's the beautiful thing about music and art and rock and roll.
So let's think here for a second. As I introduced you, I mentioned, you know, rock and roll, punk rock, a royalty thing, your older brother.
My brother is Joey Ramone.
Ramone.
Certainly not going to deny that the blood of punk rock royalty runs through my veins.
And so your music past, initially you were working pretty closely with your brother. I mean, you helped teach him play guitar, helped him in different capacities like songwriting. All of that you detail in your memoir, I Slept With Joey Ramone.
I slept with him too, that is true.
So as you wrote that, were there issues that you guys had never resolved between each other that made it difficult to work on the book, or was the whole thing like a cathartic experience in the end?
Well, that's the word people always seem to use. I guess they hoped that was it for me, but it was extremely difficult, but we had resolved all our issues, fortunately. I can't imagine what it would have been like if we hadn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, my mom died during the period I was writing that book, and to have to write about these people when things like that are happening, it's hard. It's hard to make it entertaining while you're feeling those emotions. But I did my best, and I'm proud of that book, and I just think I have enough material now for another one. There are always feelings of guilt after you lose somebody that you were that close with. Well, maybe I shouldn't have said this. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. But the major issues that we had, which weren't many, I mean, we were best friends practically our whole lives together. And it was all good at the end, except for the fact that it was the end.
Well, April of next year, it'll be 20 years since his passing.
Right. And, you know, oddly enough, it's going to be Easter Sunday, April 15th, which that's the first time since 2001. I'm not sure, but it was a strange day. It was April 15th. It was Easter Sunday, tax day, which of course can't be on Sunday, and it was also I think Passover, all those things in that one day.
Right. I know that you have been good about having these birthday bashes and remembrance of your brother and being a benefit for the Joey Ramone Foundation for Lymphoma Research. So this year, with the way the world is, that it's not going to happen. Are you going to try and have that event in the fall if you can?
It's impossible to say. I wish I could get some kind of grasp of an idea of when things might return to normal, but it's just impossible to say. And I'm not going to start asking people, are you going to be around? It takes a long time to get this thing organized. So right now, it's just, who knows if it's possible to even maybe do some kind of a live stream from a studio or maybe even my brother's apartment or something. I'll do it.
Well, you mentioned when we were talking about the book that maybe you have enough material to write another one. I know it was with your help that there were two posthumous solo albums released of material that Joey was singing on. Are there any tracks for a third? Is there any other material that wasn't used?
I think we kind of got the best of it. You know, there might be a few things that I didn't think were worth finishing or releasing, but the only other project that I could see taking on and doing is an album of collaborations of his with other people.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to get that together. I spent enough time, you know, I put myself and my things on the back burner for many, many years. So I'm trying to maybe keep some respect for myself here and get my own things out.
Right. Well, speaking of something else that you had worked on that I'm not sure that a lot of folks are familiar with is, let's say by 77, the Ramones are off doing their thing, and you wound up working with a completely different icon, rock music writer Lester Bangs, recording an album with him under the name of Birdland. How did that come together?
Well, actually, I was working for the Ramones for a couple of years, and they couldn't afford to pay anybody. I volunteered, and I was working with them until their tour in, of Europe, their first tour of Europe in 1977 with the Talking Heads. That was going to be it for me. I wanted to get back to playing. Lester had moved to New York City by that time. He'd become sort of friendly with my brother. I had met him once before that in Detroit. But one night, my brother came into CBGB with Lester, and he knew I was trying to form a band, and he said Lester was looking to form a band also, and we started talking, and he asked me, what's on your turntable right now? And I said, Jazz Abstract. And he said, me too. You know, so we clicked. Things clicked with me and Lester, and we wrote a lot of great songs together. And one of them, we just recorded, actually. That'll be on a record down the road somewhere. It's called Loneliness.
Okay.
It's one we didn't get to record on that album, that mm-hmm. Birdland album, which we made because the bass player, Dave Merrill, in Birdland was an engineer at Electric Lady, and they were doing renovations. It was April Fool's Day, 1979, and we went in there, and he snuck us in there, and we just recorded 9 songs real quick.
April Fool's Day, that's
April Fool's Day.
So what was it like working in the studio with Lester? Did that go off pretty smooth?
Well, Lester didn't have that much experience in the studio. He had a lot more experience in front of a typewriter than the microphone.
Uh-huh.
But we did what we could. I mean, Lester was a unique character, and it was an adventure. But I loved Lester. He was a great guy, and we remained friends even after Birdland evolved into the Rattlers.
Well, speaking of the Rattlers, around the time you were working with Lester, were the Rattlers an ongoing thing already?
No. Actually, the same guys that were in Birdland became the Rattlers after we parted ways with Lester.
And so in 1979, the Rattlers, you released this single, On the Beach, which to me is a very cool, like, teenage death song with a B-movie twist, like maybe a Jody Reynolds Endless Sleep meets a radiated creature from the Black Lagoon. You used that song as a single, so you must have been pretty happy with it, right? What prompted you to write On the Beach?
It was shortly after the catastrophe on Three Mile Island had recently happened.
Yeah.
I was watching a movie, an old, I guess, early 60s, grade B horror science fiction movie called Horror on Party Beach. And that's kind of what I melded the catastrophe with, you know, grade B science fiction movie, which is what they do in those movies. And there it was, on the beach.
So Pat Carpenter, my notes say, is playing drums with you on the new single. I think he played with you in your group Stop. Was he also in the Rattlers?
No, Pat came along after that.
So Pat's been with you for a while. How did you come on to Pat? How'd you find Pat?
I found Pat actually through my brother. He had a friend named George Seminara, who's still with us. Hey, George. Did a lot of the Ramones videos. Pat is a video editor, And actually, you know, I had an ad out that was still in the days where we used to put ads out and get a lot of phone calls. But he lives in Long Island, and guess us New York City guys have a bit of a snobbery, and so we don't call back people who are from Long Island. No offense, my neighbors in Nassau and Suffolk. But Pat had called, but I'd never called him back. And then my brother just happened to tell me about this drummer that George knows, who's great, and Pat, and he was right. And I actually got my bass player, Wesley, to be my brother, who was working with a band called Cycle Sluts from Hell. The guitar player, Chris Moffitt, had a friend, a bass player friend, and that's where Wes came from. But so, I found him, CJ Ramone, so it's even, I think, you know, fair enough. I introduced him to John and all those guys also. But, so we helped each other out as much as we could.
A pal of ours here in the Underground Garage, Spencer Alexander, he plays in Wildlife. He's also a graphic artist. He did your single cover. Have you met Spencer?
We haven't met, but we've spoken many times, and we collaborated on the idea for that cover, and Spencer did an amazing job. I just love it. Love what he did, and hopefully work together in the future.
Have you ever had a chance to check out his band, to check out Wildlife?
Only the videos. I haven't had a chance to see them. Actually, I was asked them if they wanted to play at the next Joey Ramone birthday bash, and asked Spencer if he wanted to do the artwork for it. But that's not going to be happening. So one of these days.
One of these days. I think that, you know, that a great double bill there, Mickey Lee and Wildlife.
I think so, too.
I want to talk about the singles B-side, Trouble Man. I see it was recorded by Tim Phillips. He also mastered it. Who's Tim Phillips?
Tim Phillips is a great engineer, and he's also a musician he just was recommended to me by the owner of the studio Mercy Sound on 14th Street and Avenue B, lower east side of Manhattan. And we met, and I heard some of the things he had done, and we started working together, and it just clicked. Tim's great. I plan on continuing to work with him for a long time.
So Felt Like Love, you were about to go to sleep or woke up. You knew it was important to get the song idea down as soon as possible. What about Trouble Man? Did that come to you in a similar fashion, or how did you come up with it?
Well, I started writing that song actually a long time ago, and finalized it a long time ago also, and had kind of just forgotten about it. But what had happened was I had gotten arrested for marijuana possession, and I was set up by my pot connection, who had gotten arrested, and he came into my house wearing a wire. This is in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
So a few months after he had come to my house, about 10 DEA FBI agents came through my door and found half a pound of pot in my closet and wanted me to put on a wire and go getting other people I know in trouble. And they would kind of doing that to me for about 5 months. Actually, 2 months after they arrested me, the World Trade Center there was an explosion in the World Trade Center in 1993. So
yeah,
it was kind of ridiculous, but it was scary, and I was in trouble, deep.
You were the trouble man.
I was troubled. I had problems.
Well, how did that work out in the end?
Well, I told them eventually that after, you know, 5 months, I just said, listen, for what I did and what you are trying to have me do, you're trying to catch a shark with a minnow. And it's just, you want me to, you know, offering people huge amounts of things, and it's just not believable. And I said, do what you're going to do. Either indict me, because they were threatening to send me away for 7 years if I didn't cooperate with them. So eventually I just said, listen, I'm not doing anything else. I'm not doing anything. I told you what I did. I admitted what I did, obviously, and do what you're going to do. And so a week later, they told me they were going to let me plead guilty to the charges of possession with intent to distribute small amounts. So it was a felony, the lowest grade felony that there is. But
did that require you to do any prison time? Or
no, it was my first offense. They even apologized to me. said, listen, we know you're a good guy, and but every once in a while, this is part of the routine, and we have to do it, and we don't want to see you have to go to jail, and they wound up just getting 2 years probation.
Well, it seems like, too, Mickey, that making you wear a wire and, as you said, try to get the minnow to catch a shark, that you're just putting your life in danger for...
Exactly. Well, I guess I was putting my life in danger. Well, the people I know aren't dangerous kind of people, so I don't know. The thought of it just kind of made me sick, you know.
You're right.
Of doing that, especially for marijuana, even back then.
Yeah.
In 1992, you know, Clinton was getting elected, and he was the one who said he admitted he smoked, but he didn't inhale, right?
Yeah.
So it just, today, I mean, I would I'd go into a Medman store and buy what I could walk out with as much as I had in my closet at that time.
Right. So in that song, you got the lyrics, isn't it about the... angel's wings coming down and lifting you up. Not getting the words right, I don't think, but that there's that imagery.
Yeah. Let the angel's wings come and lift me off my feet. Yeah. It was a prayer, even though I'm a Jewish guy from Forest Hills, Queens, but I tried my best.
Mickey, thanks so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Manfred, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Right, man. We got to give Trouble Man a spin now. It's Mickey Lee and Little Steven's Underground Garage B-side of the new single out on Wicked Cool Records called Felt Like Love.
The angel's wings lift me off of my feet. Come and rescue me. I'm in trouble deep. I want to look it in the eye and bring it down to its knees. I'm in trouble deep. Somebody help me, please.
Trouble Man. That's Mickey Lee here in Little Steven's Underground Garage with a B-side to his new single, Felt Like Love. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Mickey for being my guest today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. And join me next week when we'll check in with singer-songwriter Lucinda Williams. That's your next Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock. In Little Steven's Underground Garage.
There's a place in New York where you can walk through the actual front doors of the world's most famous recording studio, Abbey Road. Through those doors, past the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, and countless other rock giants. Where can you find those doors? At the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. The Abbey Road doors and thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock Cafes, Hard Rock Casinos, and Hard Rock Hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.